You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday and Sunday right here on KTEP.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rose's Cantina, music would play and Felina would whirl. Blacker than night were the eyes of Felina, wicked and evil while casting a spell.
Good afternoon, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today is Jim Varnado. And Jim is the author of the recently released book, Big Iron. It's based on the three ballads by Marty Robbins. Big Iron is, of course, the gun that the Arizona Ranger carried into Agua Fria to kill Texas Red. But we are joined this morning by Jim and his lovely wife, Kathy, and they're here to talk about that book. And thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Well, thanks for having us. We really appreciate this opportunity.
Now, Jim, tell us, first of all, there have been stories sung in the old days. Of course, you know, that's how people used to tell history, through song sometimes. And a lot of, during the Civil War, a lot of people say that the Negro spirituals were songs passed on from family to family. And, of course, gunfighter ballads are kind of like the ballads that they have today, except some of the ballads they have today in the Mexican culture are about the cartels and some of the bad guys, but they also had ballads about like Billy the Kid and stuff like that.
Yes.
So getting back to square one, you said that you had been listening to Marty Robbins since you were a youngster, and everyone has heard the song El Paso, and Marty Robbins later recorded El Paso City to talk about the song itself. How did you get involved in the Marty Robbins thing and the fact that, of course, being from Oklahoma, you listen to a lot of country music and a lot of the country greats. So tell me a little bit about how this novel came about.
I'm 65 years old. I've heard all of my life that people are too busy to be good at what they really should be doing. And that was basically it. I was not able to write like this. Now, I wrote an article for Trade Magazine for about 10, 11 years. And I've done some short stories, but to really seriously sit down and write a book, one thing, it is a tough project to do by yourself. I had an enormous amount of help and support from my wife, and Kathy was a legal secretary for 30 years, so she was a big help. But the big thing, and this may sound simple, was simply the time to do it. I have had the ideas, you know, in my mind, and every now and then I think about them, develop them a little bit. But I did not have the time until I retired to actually sit down and put in the time, the effort, and what it takes to actually write a full book. And Big Iron is almost 400 pages. We took 5.5 pages of lyrics, all three songs, the ballads that we base the book on, are El Paso, Felina, and Big Iron. And those stories, like we were just saying a few minutes ago, those stories actually complement each other to begin with. There's a natural fit between those three songs. But just to sit down and have the time and make the effort and everything that it takes to write a book, I had to retire first.
But it's interesting, as you mentioned, that these songs interblend. And as you said earlier before we started, that in a way, it's kind of like an Old West Shakespeare.
It is, exactly. And again, this was so hard to catch. I never caught this listening to the song. It was only when I read the lyrics to El Paso that it dawned on me. I looked, oh, wow, you know, the light went off, an epiphany. This is a Shakespearean tragedy set in the Old West. And then once you look at it from that viewpoint, you listen to the song again from a whole different perspective.
Those of us who grew up in El Paso or around Badlands of New Mexico, as Marty Robbins wrote in El Paso, know about the songs and about the story and the lyrics. But the way you intertwined the ballads, and when I was reading, I said, oh, how brilliant. This is incredible. And the way you got Felina and the Texas cowboy who got shot, and then the way you talk about Texas Red and the Ranger, you give a little bit of history about everything, including some of the lyrics of the songs.
Yes, we are also licensed to publish the lyrics to those three songs. We can do this in advertising, give them away. The Marty Robbins family is just absolutely gold. I mean, they're wonderful people to work with. And we made a deal. Kathy and I received the licenses and copyright usage to go ahead and write the book any way we wanted. They did not put any conditions on it. They didn't say, we want you to write it from Dad's perspective or our perspective. It was just a carte blanche, blank check deal. And they said, just write it. But again, the point you were just making, the stories had to be close and interrelated to begin with. I can say that I expanded on them, but the real genius is Marty Robbins. And then by him putting his genius in writing and creating, I think creating is a better word than writing or performing, because these are actual creations. And when you put the three of them together, there's just a natural bond there. And I simply took the three songs and expanded on them, and like I said, turned the 5.5 pages of lyrics into 388 pages of Old West novel.
Music critics have talked about, and it's hard to believe that MTV in August is going to be 33 years old, I believe.
Wow.
And so when MTV first came out, the first song they played was Video Killed the Radio Star. And a lot of critics said what MTV had done was taken away our imagination, because no longer did we know or think about a song the way it was intended to be. And so when you think of Big Iron, Felina, and El Paso, in your mind, you're envisioning these things of what's going on. It fits perfectly, almost like a movie.
Oh, that would be great. But again, it was just the time, the effort, and the investment. And I cannot say enough about my wife, because at the very beginning of the book, you'll see that when I dedicated this book to Marty Robbins, and then I co-dedicated it to my wife, because she put out a tremendous, tremendous amount of effort on this. And she's kind of in the background, and she doesn't like to admit it. And she's sitting there without a microphone close enough to talk. But she was an enormous amount of help and encouragement. And she's an excellent editor.
And she's very humble, as you mentioned. But it's interesting what you write in your book also, and what you wrote to me in one of our emails where we corresponded, the fact that it was taking you hours to get the licensing for the lyrics, and it took her about 20 minutes or so.
I love this. I love it. Again, Kathy was a legal secretary. And what I did, once we really decided we were going to do this, I said, of course, we have to have the license and copyright usage. And so I got on the internet, I got on my computer, and I looked and looked and looked. The more I looked, the more frustrated I got. And the more frustrated I got, the worse my searches got. And I ended up calling my computer everything except what it really was. And then my wife comes into we took a spare bedroom and made it into a writer's cave. So she came into the cave and asked me what was wrong. And I told her, I can't find out where to get the license. She goes into her room, gets on her computer, finds out who it is. BMG Costellas in New York City is the Marty Robbins family agency. So she got on the internet, found out who it was, sent him an email, and got a response all within 20 minutes. So I said, you're hired.
Now tell me, what did the Marty Robbins, because you said the Marty Robbins family has been very cooperative. Have they read the novel already? And,
yes.
And tell me what
yes.
different thoughts.
Ronnie Robbins gave me what has to be the greatest compliment possible. And after he read the book, he sent me an email. He said the same thing. He said that what you were saying. He said, I love the way that you put the characters together. He said, I love the way you did the story and what you did with the characters and how they interacted. He said, I really believe my dad would enjoy your book.
It's interesting, again, going back to the characters, the Texas cowboy who gets killed and dies in Felina's arms, and then she dies with him. The fact that, and when I first read it, it said William Travis, so I'm going, wait a minute, are we talking here about the Alamo? But he adopted that name, and few people know, because reading the lyrics or listening to the lyrics of that song, El Paso, they think he's just a Texas cowboy, cowpuncher, who, you know, falls in love with a Mexican girl, and that's the end of it. And then the way you form Texas Red is very interesting because he's a college-educated man who turns outlaw.
Yes, yes. And actually, Texas Red, or excuse me, William.
Travis Jr.
I hate to give away the spoiler, but there's no way we can avoid it. But Texas Red is the son of Felina and Will, the cowboy that loved her. And William would have become Texas Red under any circumstances. But there was an altercation with William back east in college between William's sister and a deputy sheriff. And the events triggered that change sooner rather than later. And in, that is the event that actually brought Texas Red from the genius level college student or graduate into an outlaw, feared outlaw.
And one of the things that you mentioned also, and few people who know Western history, the fact that the Arizona Rangers did not last as long as the Texas Rangers.
Correct. The Texas Rangers have a long, good history, very, very honorable history. This is one of our major points of research because whether we publish it or not, we have to follow a timeline so everything works out correctly. But the Arizona Rangers, their first time they organized was in 1860. Then they disbanded in 1861 because all of the Arizona Rangers joined the Confederate Army. Then the second time the Arizona Rangers formed was in 1882. That only lasted 2 months. But that was just enough time for me to bring Kyle. The ranger's name is Kyle Lawton. So Kyle was a U.S. Marshal for 10 years, and his job was to travel around and extract the worst of the worst outlaws. And he was the only one that could do what he did by himself. But he had a very, very lonely life, and he chided himself by saying he knew more rattlesnakes by name than he did people. But
it's interesting that you mentioned that because it just shows how lonely a life he led.
Yes. And he had just, he was getting tired of going from one dangerous little town to another. He had an uncanny instinct about being set up, ambushes and things like that. So he was able to survive. But he was just really, really tired of it. And he was starting to have thoughts. Marshall was having thoughts about settling down. So then he found out about this opportunity in Arizona because they were looking for rangers, so he became a ranger. Now, something most people don't realize is that New Mexico Territory was split north and south by the Confederacy, the opposite of the way it is today. But then when the Union took control of New Mexico Territory, they split it into the modern-day east and west. Okay, but that was the only bloodless separation of states in U.S. history. The separation of New Mexico Territory into New Mexico on the east and Arizona is the only bloodless separation in our history. And so I wrote the book where, with that history in mind, New Mexico requested. They found out about the marshal that was famed for extracting outlaws, and that they found out the authorities in New Mexico, around Santa Fe, found out that Arizona had this very, very skilled, highly skilled, experienced U.S. Marshal that is now a ranger. So they asked if they would send that ranger to them to extract Texas Red, because Texas Red lived in Agua Fria, of course, and which was only 8 miles from Santa Fe. And so the authorities in Santa Fe didn't like that. And they were intimidated. They feared Texas Red. So they made the request. And then the timing just happened to work out where Kyle was then transferred, so to speak, to New Mexico to extract Texas Red.
Now the stranger started talking, made it plain to folks around. Was an Arizona Ranger, wouldn't be too long in town. He came here to take an outlaw back alive or maybe dead. And he said it didn't matter, he was after Texas Red. After Texas Red. Wasn't long before the story was relayed to Texas Red.
But the outlaw didn't worry, men, the tripe of forward day. 20 men had tried to take him, 20 men had made a slip. 21 would be the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
As you mentioned, we've been talking about the men, but you do a very good job, again, of developing your characters. And the main character from El Paso, and also Marty Robbins wrote a song about her as well, is Felina. And she had quite an upbringing as well, and she was almost as wild as the West Texas wind.
Yes, she was. And she had a hunger that she didn't understand for something on the other side of the mountains. And she could never understand it, or her parents could not understand it. They didn't know exactly what to do or deal with her, but she just had, there was something calling her. And what it was the wildlife. And she ended up as a dancer, saloon girl.
Out in New Mexico, many long years ago, there in a shack on the desert, one night in a storm. Amid streaks of lightning and loud desert thunder, to a young Mexican couple, a baby was born. Just as the baby cried, thunder and lightning died. Moon gave its light to the world, and the stars did the same. Mother and father, both proud of the daughter that heaven had sent them. Felina was this baby's name. When she was 17, bothered by crazy dreams, she ran away from the shack and left them to roam. Father and mother both asked one another, what made her run away? What made Felina leave home? Tired of the desert nights, poverty, grief, and strife, she went her way late one night in the moon's golden beam. She didn't know where she'd go, but she'd get there, and she would find happiness if she would follow her dream.
We had a character, a very major character, a very strong woman named Phoebe. And Phoebe looks like she's 28 years old, but she's actually 38. And she takes Felina under her wing, so to speak, and they actually develop a very strong mother-daughter relationship. Mm. And Phoebe is the one that actually gets Felina because she's this very, very naive 17-year-old girl, Felina is, when she runs away from home. And then without someone to really help take care of her, like Phoebe, she probably wouldn't have made it.
After she ran away, she went to Santa Fe, and in the year that she stayed there, she learned about life. In just a little while, she learned that with a smile, she could have a pretty clothes, she could be any man's wife.
As far as the song goes, El Paso, some people may wonder, he was probably acting in self-defense, and of course, I don't want to give away any of the novel, but then the fact that in the song, he says, out to the right,
five mounted cowboys,
out to my left, around a dozen or more. Mm-hmm. So you're going, wow, you know, they send that many people to go after this guy?
Yes, because he was feared.
Off to my right, I see five mounted cowboys. Off to my left, right, a dozen or more. Shouting and shooting, I can't let them catch me. I have to make it to Rose's back door.
Yeah, this, of course, was Texas Red's father. And Will, it was William Sr. and William Jr. But William Sr. much preferred Will. So he's called Will. And then Texas Red is called William when he's not called Texas Red.
But Texas Red, it's interesting, people might wonder, why do they call him Texas Red? Well, he was from Texas, but it wasn't red because of the gunfights or anything like that.
No.
Tell us okay. What happened.
Again, Texas Red is 6'2", 240 pounds, and he's a very, very skilled boxer. So all those years that he spent in college getting that master's degree, he was on the boxing team. And his hand speed was so fast, and he was so quick that he always had his opponent's blood on his hands. So they started calling him Texas Red. Here's the one of the biggest ironies of the whole story is that William refused to be called Texas Red because he thought that the source of that nickname was too violent.
And it's interesting that people, again, he was not a bum cowboy. In fact, both he and the Ranger came into quite a bit of money.
Yes. The Ranger, not nearly as much, but I believe we figured out the net wealth of Texas Red and Linda combined was a little over $2 million at that time, which would be
because
about like $200 million now.
I believe in one point in the book, the Ranger says that he has been saving his salary for over 10 years as a U.S. Marshal, and it adds up to about $1,000.
Yes, he saved up $1,000 in 10 years.
My gosh, that's incredible.
But his father hit a moderate level silver mine.
Silver mine.
And then his father was killed in an accident while mining. And then he ended up inheriting $20,000, which that in itself, you could retire on $20,000 easily back then. So he wasn't a pauper. And by the way, the correct term at the time was pocket full of rocks. If you were wealthy, you had a pocket full of rocks. Now, compared to Texas Red, the Ranger was a pauper. But compared to the average person, he had a pocket full of rocks.
We stereotype gunfighters, and of course, Charles Portis, I think, in his book, refers to them as shootists, not gunfighters. And that's why John Wayne, in his last movie, The Shootist, where he comes to El Paso to retire because he has cancer and he wants to stop gunfighting. But the problem with that, as you mentioned in your book also, when you're the best, everybody wants to go after you because they want to be the best.
Yes.
Or say they defeated the best.
Yes.
And that doesn't always happen because I'm not sure if you want to share a little bit about the Ranger's brother.
Oh, okay. The Ranger's brother was a Texas Ranger, and he was sent to bring Texas Red back. But unfortunately, he was also pulled a red big iron. The Ranger's father bought both of his sons a customized big iron. And a big iron, after, again, more research, we came up with an 1847 Colt Walker. It is the most powerful black powder handgun ever made. And at the time, it was the most powerful handgun up until 1934 when the 357 Magnum was released. So only until then, it was the most powerful. And to this day, it's still the most powerful black powder handgun ever made. So his brother and the Ranger both had one. They weren't quite identical, but they were matched pair. And the Ranger's brother carried his in the gunfight with Texas Red. And then later on, the Ranger says to Texas Red at first, when they were very combative to each other, and the Ranger said, "Well, my brother was buried with his big iron, and the one I'm packing will bury you."
The morning passed so quickly, it was time for them to meet. It was 20 past 11 when they walked out in the street. Folks were watching from the windows, everybody held their breath. They knew this handsome Ranger was about to meet his death. About to meet his death. There was 40 feet between them when they stopped to make their play. And the swiftness of the Ranger is still talked about today. Texas Red had not cleared leather for a bullet fairly ripped. And the Ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
And afterwards, they seem to, at least for a little while, they change because they become almost friends. Like, let's talk about this. You know, this is nothing personal, but it's business. I have to take care of it. And if you hadn't done what you had done, or if I wasn't supposed to do what I was supposed to do, we could end up being good friends.
Yes, exactly. And they would have been more like brothers under better circumstances. But what happened, Texas Red, more than anything, craved to become a legend. And the gunfights that he had, you know, the song, and the notches on his pistol were one and 19 more. But these 20 men that he beat in a fast draw gunfight, all of the fights were fair, but they were not professionals. And you could not build a legend on, you know, mediocre gunfighters. Then when Texas Red met the Ranger, as soon as he met the Ranger, he knew. He said, this guy's different. Texas Red knew, this is a professional. This is a gunfighter. And with his history and his background, the Ranger's background, Texas Red realized, we can build a legend here. The gunfight between him and me could be, you know.
Talked forever.
He being Texas Red said, we're not going to have our gunfight right now. He had a few men working for him. And then Texas Red said, what we're going to do, we're going to wait 8 days. They met on a Friday. And then Texas Red said, we're going to have our gunfight next Saturday. And the Ranger says, you mean tomorrow? And Texas Red says, no, a week from tomorrow. One of us only has a week to live, so we might as well live it. But the idea was that gave Texas Red time to make contacts and build this gunfight into this lifelong living legend. For all this time,
what are the things that also you question, and I guess a lot of people question too, is you know, the movie with Gary Cooper, High Noon, but this is set for 11:20 or 11:30.
The gunfight is at 11:20, and there's a reason for that. I don't
you
know.
And buy the book.
And again, as you mentioned, it's a Shakespearean tragedy the way it ends.
Yes. Yes, it is. And it's hard to catch just listening to the song itself. It's reading the lyrics. And a couple of things we had to change. We were discussing how everything intertwines and fits. We only had to make three major changes, and this is one of them. It says in the lyrics here in Felina that they were only together for 6 weeks. But in order to have a son, we made that 10 months. They were together for 10 months. And then had a son, and he was 2 years old, or two months old, when this occurred. And like I say, a lot of people do not know about Felina, but that gives a lot of details to the El Paso side of the story.
And I don't believe it's in Gunfighter Ballads, but it is in The Essential Marty Robbins, that song is. And thank you very much for reading it. And again, thank you very much, Jim Varnado and his wife, Kathy, who are the authors. He is the author of Big Iron. And we taped this on a Tuesday, but all week he's been reading at Rosa's Cantina. And this weekend, you can check our Facebook page for details. He will be there this weekend signing copies of the books, Big Iron. Again, the website is?
Big Iron, the book.
Big Iron, the book, and you can find out more information about that. Thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you for having us.
I'm getting weary, unable to ride, but my love for the leader is strong, and I rise where I fall. Though I am weary, I can't stop to rest. I see the white puff of smoke from the rifle. I feel the bullet go deep in my chest. From out of nowhere, Felina has found me, kissing my cheek as she kneels by my side. Cradled by two loving arms that I'll die for, one little kiss and Felina goodbye.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.